is Dr. Rosemary Frasca, and she is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and the Harvard School of Public Health. Her research interests include health disparities, literacy, and maternal child health, and she holds a core faculty position in the public health program at UPenn. And today she's going to be talking with us about exploring the association between low maternal health literacy and pediatric health care utilization. Are limited reading skills a barrier of concern? Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. So again, this work was a collaboration between myself and Lenny Matthews, Ian Bennett, Steve Marcus, Phyllis Solomon, and Jennifer Culhane, all folks at Penn and Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So today we'll go quickly over the background and significance behind this study. We'll talk about the methodology employed. It was a mixed method study with a quantitative and a qualitative arm. We'll discuss the results and key discussion points and talk about the limitations and lessons learned. So what we know about preventative pediatric care is that it decreases morbidity and mortality and improves health outcomes. We know it decreases health care costs, it reduces ED visits, and reduces admissions into hospitals. We know that it's an opportunity to promote vaccine compliance, which is great for herd immunity, which we all appreciate in public health. It also secures opportunities for parents to discuss important topics with their pediatrician and have health education moments. It also is a great opportunity for screening for things like lead, bullying, and obesity. Utilization of pediatric preventative care varies across many sociodemographic and socioeconomic variables, such as SES, race, ethnicity, maternal education, income, parental marital status, nativity, and maternal language. We also know that health literacy has been a recent topic of interest in public health and healthcare in general, and it's defined by the Department of Health and Human Services as the degree to which individuals have the capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services needed to make appropriate health decisions. So this is what we know. We know that women with low health literacy have poor health outcomes and underutilize preventative health care in many settings for a variety of diseases. We know that appropriate use of pediatric preventative care is associated with significant reductions in morbidity and mortality and has been shown to reduce health care costs and decrease hospital admissions. What we don't know for sure, there's been some conflicting evidence on the impact of maternal health literacy on pediatric health outcomes, and by and large, it's still the mom that's steering the ship of health care in the first several years of life. Patty et al. At Penn did some work looking at health literacy and TANF enrollment and found that moms that were better readers were more inclined to be enrolled in TANF appropriately and in a timely fashion, but reading really had little to do with vaccination compliance. What we don't know now is that whether children of mothers with low health literacy are at the same disadvantage similar to their mothers for their own health. So the goal of this study was really to understand that relationship in order to design and target interventions appropriately. So this was, like I said, a mixed method study employing secondary data analysis. The quantitative arm was basically taken from a cohort of women in the parent study, which we'll discuss in a bit, and data on their children from Medicaid claims. We ended up with 185 maternal child dyads to explore and analyze, far less than we had hoped to get, but Medicaid claims data is not friendly to researchers, I think would be the best way to put it. It's difficult stuff to work with. To link the records from the cohort study to the Medicaid claims study, we did this based on maternal variables and children's variables and put the data together. It was time-consuming for sure. We had some birth certificate data, we had the children's social security numbers, and we had their Medicaid claims information. We really wanted to understand to what extent maternal health literacy mediated or moderated relationships between predisposing, enabling, and need factors, where we extracted our independent variables and dependent variables under study. The qualitative arm was 14 semi-structured interviews with 11 different mothers with varied health literacy levels. So we employed the rapid assessment of adult literacy in medicine to understand the literacy levels of the women in the study. The realm is a 66-item word familiarity test, and it takes approximately 3 minutes to to use. We also confirm the results of the realm with something called the S-TOFLA, but we base the analysis on realm results. To do so, we had to categorize the realm scores into different groupings so we to better use the data for the analysis, and we clustered the lowest two levels together and we considered those women in those two groups with, to be women with low health literacy. So anybody who got a realm score equivalent to sixth grade or lower was in this bottom group, and we clustered everybody else above. So the larger study was a community-based prospective cohort of mothers and infants in Philadelphia, and they were investigating the contextual, social, behavioral, and family context of maternal child health. They had a battery of extensive interviews over several years. This was a huge study, and they were followed for 24 months postpartum. Enrollment was over 5,000 participants, and of the 5,000, 1,034 had had this health literacy assessment. This work was funded by the CDC. So in those extensive surveys that were part of this parent study, we extracted variables that were related to predisposing, enabling, and need factors based on Anderson's model of health service use among compromised populations. So we looked at race, age, maternal education, social support, income, physical access to providers, and we also explored how mothers view their capacity, the functional capacity and general state of health of their children. The dependent variables were sort of the standard ones in pediatric healthcare utilization. We looked at the number of well-child visits in the first year of life and in the second year of life, and we based that on the American Academy of Pediatric guidelines, which encourages 7 well-child visits in year 1 and 3 in year 2. We looked at the number of sick child visits, knowing that women and children end up seeing their clinicians for sick child visits more often when they're less inclined to get preventative care. We looked at ED visits, and we also looked at the number of people that were compliant with a minimum number of visits per year. So in the literature, a benchmark has been set. Even though the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends 7 visits, people consider folks compliant when their children get at least 4 in year 1 of life and at least 2 in year 2 of life. And we use CPT and ICD-9 codes to extract the number of visits from the Medicaid claims data. So the guiding hypothesis here was children of mothers with low health literacy, less than sixth grade, will be more likely than children of mothers with marginal to higher health literacy to fail to meet pediatric preventative care recommendations, to more likely to visit an emergency room, and have a greater number of sick child visits than children of mothers who read well. We decided we'd take a look at whether health literacy mediated or moderated relationships between the independent variables we identified and our outcomes of interest. And the hypothesis here was low maternal health literacy will mediate and or moderate the relationship between negative predisposing and enabling factors and timely receipt of pediatric preventative care, pediatric emergency room visits, and sick child visits. The quantitative analysis was we employed categorical variables. We looked at chi-square tests. For the continuous variables, we looked at Wilcoxon rank sum tests. We did a moderation analysis, a mediation analysis, and we employed the likelihood ratio test, and we used STATA for this approach. So the results. Among women in our sample, very few got the recommended number of visits in the first year of life. 82% of U.S. children do meet this benchmark. They do get their 7 visits. But in this group of very poor, very compromised women living in Philadelphia, this was rarely the case. In the second year of life, things were not much better. Folks got far fewer visits, preventative care visits, than they needed to or should have. Employing Anderson's model to kind of explore these relationships between the predisposing variables and what were our outcomes of interest, we first looked at the relationship between the independent variables and health literacy in general. Then we looked at their relationship between the independent variables and the dependent variables directly. And then we took a look at health literacy and the dependent variables. And then we explored health literacy as both a mediator and a moderator of these relationships. We found that health literacy was associated with maternal age and maternal education, not surprisingly so. But when it came down to looking at the independent variables and all our outcomes of interest, we found no impact of maternal health literacy on any of the relationships that we were able to identify. And this is very inconsistent with what we know about health literacy as a barrier for folks navigating the healthcare system. So among the very poor, health literacy didn't kick in and contribute to any of these relationships. Not to say that it's not an important thing to consider going forward in other areas, but among this group of very compromised women, it didn't make a difference. We looked at, you know, the mediation pathway, we looked at health literacy and all our outcomes and found no significant associations. And we were all pretty surprised by this, that this relationship in particular just didn't exist. So the qualitative analysis revealed that health literacy was not associated with the number of well child visits, sick child visits, ED visits, or the percent compliance with a minimum number of visits in year one or year two of life. When we controlled for health literacy, we saw no impact on the established associations between independent variables and our outcomes of interest. And importantly, women with higher health literacy gained no benefit from that. It wasn't a problem, and it wasn't protective. It wasn't enough to get anybody over the hump when it came to navigating the healthcare system among these people that were very compromised to begin with. And the qualitative study was, I think, turned out to be far more interesting and shed a lot of light on what we turned over in the quantitative analysis. And women basically confirmed what we had uncovered with the quantitative analysis. So we did in-depth semi-structured interviews, and we explored needs, perceived need, health beliefs, social support, and relationships, and ability to navigate the healthcare system. All the interviews were transcribed verbatim, and we used InVivo 8 to code and analyze the transcripts. So the guiding qualitative hypothesis was qualitative interviews will show that mothers with low health literacy will report different issues related to access to preventative pediatric care than mothers with marginal high health literacy. Additionally, they will perceive different barriers to care and will suggest different interventions to reduce these barriers. So basically, wrong on all accounts. None of these hypotheses were true. But still learned a lot from the study. So the qualitative analysis revealed that women with low health literacy and women with higher health literacy among this population, again, of very poor, very compromised folks, encountered overlapping sets of challenges when navigating the healthcare system. They identified things as work schedules being inflexible, that there were many hidden costs with accessing healthcare that really were not accounted for or supported, even in a clinic setting where they were getting free care, they still had to get there, and that became a barrier. Communication was just as challenging for the poor readers as it was for the better readers, and access overall people struggled with. So several themes emerged during the analysis, and we went back to Anderson's model and tried to organize the themes that came out of the analysis into the model to help us better understand this population and their needs. We also had this critical case emerge, which I'll speak to briefly, but one of the women who was part of the qualitative arm of the study was a woman who had been diagnosed as an adult with dyslexia and had a very high IQ, but had incapable of reading a word and had used her children to basically translate everything that she needed to, any information she got from the healthcare system. So she was different than the other poor readers we encountered, and her case was unique. So this is Anderson's model with the things inherent in the model in blue and then the things we've organized into the model in red after the qualitative analysis. So some of the more interesting things that came out is that women with fewer children really felt better about navigating the healthcare system. Once they had two or three children, even over that hump, it became much more challenging to get kids where they needed to go at the appropriate time. Employment became a barrier. We sort of assume that employment is a good thing, but among folks that are employed in situations that are not flexible at all, getting to their pediatrician in a timely fashion is really compromised by full-time employment. So women who had been both employed and unemployed as parents said that it was easier for them to navigate the system when they were unemployed than it was when they were employed. There was lots of administrative and logistic hassles that came to light. Calling the pediatrician's office was a huge hassle for many people, and connecting with providers in a timely fashion was really challenging. People spoke at great lengths about these lay experts and pseudo-experts and experts they relied on in their personal life to help make healthcare decisions. And this was a pretty interesting phenomenon that came up among these women. And it didn't vary based on literacy level at all. People in all groups spoke about this. So this is an opportunity that I wanted to share with you, and this is a quote from the mom who participated in the study who had no ability to read whatsoever and had relied 100% on her daughter to translate health information for her in the past. And she was in the pediatrician's office considering whether or not to get the HPV vaccine and not comfortable sharing this literature with her daughter, who was her source of translation. Because she didn't understand the sexual context of the vaccine. So she was really in a pickle because her usual approaches to navigating barriers based on her dyslexia were totally, you know, disarmed in this situation. So people with dyslexia have all these strategies to get around, but in the healthcare setting it seems that it becomes that when the stress is high and anxiety is high, they're unable to employ their regular approaches. But she was explaining that, yes, but I'm like, okay, it prevents cancer. Is there any side effects from it? He says, like, no, it's in the pamphlet. And I'm like, ah, I see that. I understand that. It was on the paper, but it's different when you hear it from someone. And I just wished he would have had more conversation with me about it, because it was like, no, everybody's getting it, and you should just, you know, get it too. And she wasn't able to show the information to her daughter, who is her translator. So the benefits of the mixed methods really had us understand the limitations of the study kind of came to light when we looked at the qualitative arm and the quantitative arm together. There were these unexpected findings, this notion of these different varied approaches and informants that people rely on when making healthcare decisions, that the case that emerged of this woman with dyslexia was something that we had not considered as in terms of a unique barrier related to literacy. Parity was something that we hadn't really thought about being an important thing to consider, and that perhaps women with more children need different interventions to navigate the healthcare system. So these are just some quotes related to the different experts that people would rely on when it came to making decisions around health. So one woman shared with us that she'd call the hospital and get reprimanded for calling the hospital if she had a question. One woman said that she talks to her friends, but their kids were younger and they didn't really know much about the topics that she was interested in the time. One woman had a cousin who was in nursing school and she called her about everything. One woman shared with us that she, you know, didn't take the advice of family and friends, and she would much prefer to get information directly from her physician. So the sample size was limited. We were really in trouble. We thought we were going to have at least 1,000 women in our study, and when it came down to using the Medicaid claims data and really cleaning that data, we ended up with far fewer women than we wanted. The inclusion criteria was limited to people who had 10 months of eligibility in the Medicaid claims data, so we lost a few folks that maybe had 9 months or 8 months. It was really tough to locate the poorest readers in this population. They seemed a little harder to reach for the qualitative study than for the quantitative analysis. They were much more likely to be lost in the cohort. The rapid assessment of adult literacy in medicine, we worried that it may not have been as sensitive to poor reading in this population. And I don't think that we took full advantage of the available data, because the survey data was very rich, and I think we can go back and ask many other questions of it. And, of course, there's limited generalizability and transferability, because this was a study based in Philadelphia. Anyway, thank you for your attention.